Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening to Post for Politics Iowa Style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin, of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we go again. Welcome.
Oh, it's good to be here, Dennis.
Good to have you here. Tonight, we are going to take a look at some of the big races coming up in the November general election here in Iowa, in the wake of last week's primary, where voters decided who is going to run against whom in November. But before we do, we want to wrap up a few things from the primary election. Last week was a busy week for us, Laura. We were on the air a lot of nights live. But for starters, more than 356,000 Iowans took part in the Tuesday primary. That's the second highest total for a primary since 1994, and more than 73,000 of them voted absentee.
Yes, but it was quite a bit down from the record-breaking turnout in 2020. Of course, 2 years ago, the Secretary of State's office mailed absentee ballot request forms to the entire statewide electorate. And so as a result, there was a massive turnout with about 80% of the people voting by absentee. So this year's Republican and Democratic turnout, they weren't bad, certainly, but the Republican turnout was down about 20% from 2020, and the Democratic turnout was down more than 40% from 2020. In fact, the Democratic turnout didn't even hit the level of 2018 when there were competitive races in some of the Iowa House districts, and, of course, there were several candidates running for governor and spending a lot of money on that governor's race.
Yeah, so here's an interesting thing to consider here. Republicans outnumbered Democrats in voter turnout last Tuesday night, 195,000 Republicans to about 156,000 Democrats. Is that a warning sign for Democrats in the November general?
I don't really think that those are related. I mean, Democrats didn't have any competitive primaries for any of the four congressional districts. There was only one person running for governor, and there was only one competitive race for a statewide office. That was for Secretary of State. So there really weren't a lot of campaigns to drive turnout other than, the three Senate candidates. And there were some competitive legislative races around the state. But Republicans just had more going on. They had more competition. Also, Chuck Grassley was running a lot of ads to try to drum up turnout, because he had a primary challenger. So I don't necessarily think that is a reason that Democrats should be worried. I do think that generally the prevailing political atmosphere looks like it's going to favor Republicans in November, and the turnout may also favor Republicans. They have a pro-gun constitutional amendment on the state ballot, and that is something that should be driving their turnout a lot.
And when Mike Franken last Tuesday night, defeated Abby Finkenauer for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate, he won 76 of the state's 99 counties, including, and this is remarkable to me, 16 of the 20 counties that had been in Finkenauer's former congressional district. How in the world did that happen?
Well, there were a few things that were surprising. I wasn't surprised that Mike Franken carried most of the rural counties. He was running as someone who grew up on a farm in northwest Iowa, and I thought that he would probably appeal to the electorate in those counties. But the margin of his victory statewide was surprising, and the fact, as you mentioned, that he won most of the counties in the district that Abby Finkenauer represented. You have to remember that he was spending a lot more on television than her campaign was. He was on the air in the Des Moines and Cedar Rapids markets a full month before Abby Finkenauer was. And most of the counties in her former district are reached by the Des Moines and Cedar Rapids markets. In fact, looking at the statewide map, it was really noticeable that there were clusters of counties that Mike Franken didn't carry, and almost all of them were in areas where he was not advertising on television. So they were in southwest Iowa, where neither candidate was advertising, in the Omaha market, in southeast Iowa, where Abby Finkenauer was spending more money in the Quad Cities market, and there was a cluster up by the Minnesota border, that's the Rochester, Minnesota market. So it was really noticeable that the TV ads seemed to have been quite effective for Mike Franken.
And Franken timed his spending beautifully on television. In the last month, as you pointed out, he was on always in the Des Moines and Cedar Rapids markets on TV. He outspent Abby Finkenauer, five to one on television in that last month. He was very effective with that.
Yes, and he also was outspending her on Facebook, which is where a lot of older voters are. And it is really remarkable. I just want to go back. I went back and looked at some of my coverage of the campaign finance early in that race. Mike Franken was pretty late to get in the race. Abby Finkenauer declared last July, and she raised $1 million in her first 3 months as a candidate. And so the idea that she would get outspent going down the stretch in the primary. I mean, that would have seemed outlandish to anybody. So it really was noticeable. This is when people talk about the burn rate for campaigns. This is why it can be important, because Mike Franken was not raising nearly as much money the first 6 months of his campaign, but his fundraising steadily increased, and he had more of a lean and mean operation, so that at the end, he did have quite a lot to spend on television when he needed to.
And when we talk about burn rate, we're talking about spending as much money as you get coming into your campaign. Her burn rate, Abby Finkenauer's burn rate, was extremely high, as has been Deidre DeGeer's in her campaign for governor.
Yes, and Abby Finkenauer's, in some ways, it was even higher than we realized when we were discussing it on the program before, because during the first 3 months of the year, her campaign spent about 95% of what it raised. But I forgot that some of the money that a Senate candidate can raise has to be spent during the general election. It can't be spent before the primary. There are maximum donation levels for federal candidates that don't apply to somebody like Deidre DeGeer. So Abby Finkenauer, she may have had some money in her bank account that she couldn't tap into. So that made it even more of a problem that she spent as heavily as she did.
Well, Franken is going to face Chuck Grassley in November. Of course, the Republican U.S. Senator from Iowa going for his 8th term, and he easily defeated Senator Jim Carlin in the Republican primary last Tuesday. But Carlin earned, and this was interesting to me, at least 30% support in 28 of Iowa's 99 counties. And in Hancock County, he won 42% of the vote. So my question to you, and I'm sure I've asked you this before, does this signify any potential problems for Senator Grassley in the November general?
Well, I think there are a couple of ways of looking at it. First of all, right now, there are only two candidates on the ballot. There's your Democrat and your Republican. Now, it is possible that a Libertarian or other third-party candidate could file for the Senate race by the end of August. And I would say that that is a development that could help Mike Franken, because a Libertarian candidate on the ballot, it could be a landing pad for that dissatisfied part of the Republican electorate who doesn't feel that Chuck Grassley is conservative enough or doesn't feel that he was supportive enough of Donald Trump, whatever their reasons were for voting for Jim Carlin. There is clearly a reservoir there of discontent within the Republican Party. Now, would those people vote for a Democrat? I doubt many of them would. But would they possibly leave the ballot line blank or check the box for Libertarian? Maybe. So that could be an issue. We have seen in the Seltzer polls for the Des Moines Register over the last few years that Chuck Grassley's approval rating has steadily declined. And part of the reason is that it has declined a little bit among Republicans. And so you could see that in the results from last week, that statewide, 26% of Republicans preferring Jim Carlin, who hardly had any money to spend, that when Chuck Grassley spent almost $500,000 on TV and radio ads, that's quite remarkable.
Yeah, but the question, of course, is will Republicans abandon Chuck Grassley in the general if it's just him and Mike Franken?
I think the vast majority will not do that.
Right.
So Grassley, you have to view Grassley as the prohibitive favorite in any election. He hasn't lost an election in a really long time. He lost the Republican primary for an Iowa House seat in 1956, and that's it. So other than that, he has never lost an election. So definitely there, Mike Franken has his work cut out for him. But Democrats felt upbeat last week when I talked to people around the state. They felt that Mike Franken was going to be an asset to the ticket, that he was going to make this a much closer race. Chuck Grassley tends to be reelected by 25 to 30 point margins, and Democrats are very optimistic that it's going to be a much closer race than that.
The other headline last Tuesday night is that Zach Nunn, Republican, easily won his primary in the 3rd congressional district. This is big because he's going to face Democratic incumbent Cindy Axne in November, and this race, because Nunn won it so easily, has now attained national prominence, and I think we can anticipate a lot of money coming in to back Zach Nunn.
Yes, I think that money was going to come into the 3rd district regardless, because it is widely seen as one of the most competitive House seats held by a Democrat right now. It was very almost close to dead even during the 2020 general election. And there aren't very many candidates, Democrats, who got elected to the House in districts that Donald Trump slightly carried. And Cindy Axne is one of, I think, 7 across the country. So Zach Nunn was the candidate the establishment wanted early on. And I think that people were looking to see would he have a dominant showing in the primary? And certainly he did dominate that three-way primary. And one thing we learned is when you have a well-funded candidate like Zach Nunn advertising on television throughout the district, it's just not possible to beat that by running a non-traditional campaign of the type that Gary Loeffler was running, where he was just going to a lot of in-person events. And Nicole Hasso had that same burn rate problem. She did raise quite a lot of money, but she spent almost all of what she was raising on staff and on raising more money. So she just didn't have a lot in the tank left when she needed to raise her name ID.
Zach Nunn was and is, in many cases, in many ways rather, the perfect Republican candidate, not only a state senator, but one with a military background.
Yes. I mean, the only thing that I would say that might give Republicans a little bit of pause about that is that there is some resistance to Zach Nunn in some parts of the Republican base. You might call it whatever the Trump world part of the base. Zach Nunn was an early supporter of Jeb Bush. He was not someone who was a vocal Trump supporter. He wasn't out there claiming that the 2020 election was stolen, unlike, for instance, Jim Carlin, Senator Grassley's primary opponent, who was out there beating the drum with false claims about a stolen election. And so it's possible that there are some Republicans who don't fully trust Zach Nunn, and this would be another race where I think Democrats would like to see a Libertarian added to the ballot or some other third-party candidate. Right now, it looks like it's going to be only Cindy Axne and Zach Nunn. Those would be the only two alternatives.
We are talking about some of the big stories that came out of last week's primary. Before we get into a rundown of what's coming up in November, another very interesting story from last week is the two West Des Moines Republicans remain just 25 votes apart in an Iowa Senate primary race, and it's Senate District 16 involving Bradley Price and Shad Clayton. This is very much a surprise that it's this close.
It's a surprise. In general, it's a surprise. I talked to people after this because I had expected Shad Clayton to win. As it turned out, all of my contacts also expected Shad Clayton to win, so I'm not sure what happened there. And as you say, this hasn't been called yet. Shad Clayton hasn't conceded. A 25-vote margin, it is close. It's not generally what I would consider recount close, not in a race like this. Usually the vote totals don't change very much during the canvass, and of course, under the new Iowa law, late-arriving absentee ballots can't be counted. So I think it is extremely likely that Bradley Price is going to be the Republican nominee. This is a Senate district covering part of the western suburbs of Des Moines. It is now a Democratic-leaning area. Joe Biden had quite an advantage in that area. So I think Claire Selce, either way, will be heavily favored.
We've also found out since the primary that three particular groups in Iowa spent more than $600,000 collectively on statehouse Republican races in the primary. Americans for Prosperity, the American Federation for Children, and the Family Leader. They collectively backed the same 17 candidates, and 14 of them won.
Yes, there were a few differences in some of their reasons for backing those candidates, but school choice or the school voucher bill, that was a major animating issue, and they were very successful, 14 out of 17, as you say, and it could end up being 15 out of 17. There's a Senate race in eastern Iowa that right now the top two candidates are separated by two votes. So that one could go either way. But really, it was very successful for them, and I think that we'll see more interventions in Republican Party primaries for Iowa legislative seats to come. I've been tracking these legislative races for a long time, and usually in every cycle, a few sitting legislators will get primary challengers, and it is just so unusual for those campaigns to succeed. Something very odd has to happen. There has to be usually some kind of scandal affecting the incumbent or some kind of particularly toxic vote that upsets people in the base of that party. And so to have several incumbents like this lose to challengers who were first-time candidates, that was extraordinary, and it is going to certainly motivate those three groups you mentioned and maybe even some other interest groups to start spending some money in Iowa Republican primaries. I mean, a little bit of money can go a long way in an Iowa House or Senate race.
And, of course, Governor Reynolds had injected herself into this. It was personal for her. She wanted to punish lawmakers who had not supported her bid to have public money used for private school scholarships. And by and large, she won.
She did. And she was strategic about it. I mean, I found it interesting. There was one race that we talked about briefly last week, Jane Bloomingdale up in northeast Iowa, where the family leader didn't endorse her opponent. Governor Reynolds didn't endorse her opponent. Nobody got involved in that race, and Jane Bloomingdale just barely survived that one. And so you have to wonder whether there was a little bit of the tactical decisions the governor was making on where to weigh in. I think some of the candidates, some of the primaries where she made an endorsement late, I think that those incumbents probably would have lost anyway, with or without her involvement in the race. But certainly she flexed her muscles there, and it will be something that people pay attention to next year when she's up there pushing for not just the school voucher bill, but any other bill that she might decide she wants. Because now Republicans know that if somebody challenges them in the primary, it's not guaranteed that they'll have support from their party's establishment.
All of this very interesting, and we will be following this on Capital Week. Hey, let's take a short time out here. We are listening, you're listening, to Capital Week, 15 minutes after the hour. And we are here for 1 hour tonight because we have a lot to talk about and because we are in the midst of a fundraising and membership drive here on KHOI. And our station manager, Mike Murphy, is here to give us a break and to talk about why it's important that you shouldn't take a break, that you ought to join us, subscribe to us, donate to us. In other words, help us out. Mike?
Yeah, I think that's what we need. We need support. First of all, we have just the basic bills here, the electric bills, the other utility. We have to pay an electric bill here at the studio, here in Ames, as well as at the transmitter in Story City. We have to pay the internet connection to that transmitter. We have to pay all sorts of utility bills and maintenance on our equipment. And we have to pay for our affiliation fee with Pacifica, which gains us access to such incredible programs as Democracy Now! And Sprouts and Letters in Politics and so many of the other great programs that we can bring you. All of this costs money. And so we don't have the option, nor that would me personally, I wouldn't want the option of selling bubble gum or pimple cream or or hairspray in order to pay the bills. What we do is once or twice a year we come on and make the case for supporting community radio, for increasing our membership. Basically, to be a member of KHOI, it's a it's basically a $60 annual membership, and for a family or a household, it's $100. There's also the friend of KHOI at $250, and that money is what keeps KHOI on the air. And we have a goal of 50 new members this fund drive, and that's ambitious, but we think we can do it, and we think you can do it. If you have not yet become a member, this is your opportunity, khoifm.org. Click on that yellow, become a member, donor button. It's really easy, and it's swift and secure, and it's a great way to go. You can also call the station. When no one's going to be able to answer the phone right now, but you can leave a message, and we'll be glad to get back to you. We appreciate donations of any kind, but I like the opportunity to talk to our listeners. So if you want to call and leave your contribution that way, we'll be glad to call you back and set that up. There's also, you can set it up so you have just monthly donations. So that $60 basic membership fee, that's $5 a month, which is pretty painless. And so these are all things that you can do to help support community radio, to support the programs you value, like Capital Week. Now, Dennis, I believe I heard you and Laura say before that this program, this is the 72nd Capital?
72nd since we began early last year, yes.
That's right. And we are so proud of this program, the effort that Dennis and Laura put in. I know they make it sound effortless, but it's not. They live and breathe this stuff, and we're all the benefactors of that. And so show your support for this kind of program. Go to khoifm.org, khoifm.org, or you can call 515-292-2878.
Thank you, Mike. I'm Dennis Hart, and she is Laura Bellin. And we are indeed here every week at this time to talk politics Iowa style and how it's affecting all of us. And I just want to put a personal note in here, and I've said this before on the air. Laura, you are a delight to work with. You are incredibly knowledgeable. It is a pleasure working with you on these Monday nights and the replay on Wednesday. And I've had a great deal of fun doing this, and I hope this goes on for a long time.
Oh, I hope so, too. 72 shows already. It's amazing.
Yeah, it only seems like 71. All right, let's go on with the special hour-long edition of Capital Week. Hey, last week, Iowa made the first cut in the list of states vying for the early Democratic Party nominating window in 2024. It was a list of 20. Now it's down to 17, and Iowa's still there. But what are the odds that Iowa's going to make the final three or four?
Yes, I don't see a great chance of Iowa making it to the short list, but I think we might survive one or two more cuts. I mean, the states that they cut, really, I don't think anybody expected New York, with such a huge, expensive media market, to be an early state. Also, Democrats living abroad, that would be very difficult to organize. And Nebraska just doesn't have any kind of a history of strong Democratic performance that would put it in that category either. So this wasn't, but it was one hurdle passed, so Iowa Democrats were pleased with that. And certainly their application looked at least within the ballpark of acceptable.
We'll see what happens. Apparently all the states are going to make presentations later this month, and then by August, the DNC, Democratic National Committee, is going to make a final decision.
Yes.
We'll see what happens. Joni Ernst and Chuck Grassley, they're on this show tonight because of what they're not doing. They are not part of the Republican effort in the U.S. Senate to craft a bipartisan gun deal. As you know, if you've been following the news, a tentative deal has been formulated. It includes funding for states to implement red flag laws, school safety, mental health initiatives. And 10 Republicans have signed on to this, along with 10 Democrats. But our senators, nowhere to be seen.
No, and today they were noncommittal in statements released to other organizations. It's very unlikely that Chuck Grassley or Joni Ernst would support any gun bill that didn't have the support of the firearms industry. They just haven't ever voted for bills in the past that were opposed by the gun lobby. So it wasn't surprising to me that they weren't part of this negotiating team. In fact, of the 10 Republicans involved in this effort, none of them are on the ballot this year. They're all either retiring this year or not up for reelection for another couple of years. So it wasn't a big surprise. And the statements, as I said, they were noncommittal statements, but I think that it's unlikely that we'll see Iowa senators voting for any package like this if, in fact, it ever gets to the Senate floor, which is not guaranteed.
Is there any set of circumstances that you can foresee where at least Chuck Grassley might support this bill? Anything at all?
Only if the bill, I think, had the support of the National Rifle Association. I mean, he was just running television ads across the state touting his endorsement by the NRA. He has been endorsed by them in past reelection campaigns. And I think that it's really unlikely that a few months before an election, he would go up against that organization when he's very proud to be supported by them. I would find it surprising. Now, it is possible that the National Rifle Association and other groups could look at this bill and they could say, this is something we could live with. And in that case, I think that there could be more than that bare minimum of 60 votes for it in the Iowa Senate.
All right, let's move on.
Again, I mean, in the U.S. Senate, rather.
Yeah.
Not the Iowa Senate.
We have an extra half hour tonight. We're going to spend much of it going over the prospects for the general election based upon what happened last Tuesday night here in Iowa. We're going to do the statewide races, and these are races we are guaranteed to cover between now and in November, election night. Let's start with the big one, the U.S. Senate. We've talked about it a little bit before here tonight. Chuck Grassley, the incumbent Republican seeking his eighth term, 88 years old. Mike Franken, a retired admiral, is going to go against him. Let's break this thing down in terms of what are Franken's possibilities. What do you expect to happen here?
Well, Franken is a different kind of candidate from who Democrats have nominated in the past. He hasn't held elective office before. He has mostly had a military career. He grew up in a rural area. And David Kochel, who's a leading Iowa Republican strategist, was quoted in the Des Moines Register over the weekend as saying, this is just a very different playbook than if you were running against Abby Finkenauer. She is more of a traditional Democratic politician who Iowa Republicans know how to run against. So I think that we'll have to see, as I mentioned earlier, Democrats are optimistic that there may be voters around the state who are at least open to listening to Mike Franken. He's going to need to raise a lot more money than he's already raised to be competitive. And I will be looking to see when Chuck Grassley goes negative. He tends to run a lot of positive TV ads and radio ads, usually starting around July, and then he just stays on the air for months all the way through to the election. And he hasn't in the past spent a lot of money on negative advertising because he's never felt very worried by an opponent. So I think if we were to see Chuck Grassley or some Republican-aligned group come in and spend money attacking Mike Franken, that might be a sign that their internal polling shows it could be a competitive race.
The national political prognosticators still say that Grassley is heavily favored. Given that, do you see the National Democratic Party apparatus pumping a lot of money into Franken's campaign?
I don't think that they will, but it's possible. I mean, it depends on how much they're raising overall. In 2020, the amount of fundraising for U.S. Senate seats was just astronomical, including for Democrats running in places where you would think that it would be even less competitive than Iowa, places like Kentucky and South Carolina. So it's possible that the National Democratic Committees could have a lot of money to spread around. And it's also possible that small donors from around the country could pile in and give millions of dollars to Mike Franken, even if he doesn't have the support of those big committees. Fundraising for these congressional races has changed so much just in the last 5 or 6 years.
Is there any doubt in your mind, though, that Franken is the best of the three candidates to be running, talking Democratic candidates in the primary, the best of the three to be running a statewide race against Grassley?
I think so, because it's just a very different kind of candidate. Abby Finkenauer just didn't have a lot of experience under her belt. She did serve one term in Congress and two terms in the Iowa House. But Democrats haven't had a candidate like this with a military experience. In fact, Mike Franken has said that he would potentially be the highest-ranking military officer ever elected to the U.S. Senate if he were to win as a retired vice admiral. So it's just a different type of background. I think that the way he talks about issues is a little bit different, and part of that is just his lack of experience as a candidate. And so he doesn't talk in a soundbite-friendly way, and sometimes I think some of the campaign professionals and the ad makers might not love that, but it's something that it could potentially resonate with people. Abby Finkenauer, I think, comes across more like a lot of candidates we've seen before in different races at different levels. It's just more of a standard playbook kind of candidate.
Let's get into the congressional races now that we know are going to take place in November. Congressional District 1, this gets a little confusing. To try to simply summarize it, much of Congressional District 1 was Congressional District 2, geographically in the last election, and vice versa. The incumbent is Marionette Miller Meeks, a Republican, seeking her second term. Her Democratic opponent is Christina Bohannon. Marionette Miller Meeks, in the other district, barely defeated Rita Hart by 6 votes. In the last election, where do you see this one coming down?
So this race in a neutral year, I think, would be a toss-up race. The district is actually slightly less Trump-favoring. This district, the counties in the new first district voted for Trump by about 50% to 48%. And that's a little bit less than the old district where Miller Meeks won by 6 votes out of 394,000. And Trump carried that district by almost 4%. So this could be very competitive. Christina Bohannon is from the Iowa City area. She's a law professor at the University of Iowa. Johnson County is the second largest by population after Scott County, which is the Quad Cities area. So it does cover, as you said, most of southeast Iowa. I mean, it is in a midterm year when the Democrats are in power in Washington, and now Miller Meeks has the advantage of incumbency. You have to say that she's favored, and in fact, the national forecasters do view this as a likely Republican seat, but one that could become competitive because Christina Bohannon has certainly raised enough money to run a credible district-wide effort.
6 votes out of 390,000.
Yes.
Yeah, that was stunning.
It was the closest U.S. House race in the country in 2020.
You and I were talking about it, yep. Congressional District 2, which again was Congressional District 1, don't be confused about this. Ashley Hinson, Republican, is the incumbent, seeking her second term. The Democrat is Liz Mathis, and what makes this particularly interesting, they're both former TV reporters and anchors.
Yes, they are. So they both have spent a lot of time on the air in the Cedar Rapids market, and this is a district that includes Linn County, that's Cedar Rapids, Dubuque, Blackhawk County, the Waterloo area. All of those are part of the Cedar Rapids TV market. that Liz Mathis had a much longer career on television. On the other hand, she stepped down from that career earlier. Ashley Hinson was on the air up until about 2015. So I think that in this race, the redistricting was a little bit kind to Ashley Hinson. This is a district that's slightly more Trump-favoring than the district where Hinson beat Abby Finkenauer in 2020. On the other hand, Liz Mathis is perceived as a strong candidate. She has very high name ID, and in her past races for the Iowa Senate, she was able to get a lot of crossover votes. So this is one, again, the forecasters are calling this a likely Republican race, in part because of the national environment. But Liz Mathis has raised a lot of money. She didn't have any competition in the primary. And so she should be able to run a fairly strong campaign against Ashley Hinson. Again, that the overall, whether the midterm looks like a general landslide for Republicans, I think will make a big difference in seats like this on whether how competitive they are.
It is half past the hour. Let's take another quick break here. You're listening to Capital Week. But now let's turn it over again to Mike Murphy, station manager of KHOI, because we are in the midst of a membership and fundraising campaign vitally important to this station. Mike?
You hit the nail on the head, Dennis. It is vitally important. It's vital, meaning germane to our living. And it is true. This is what we need is funds to keep doing what we're doing and hopefully do more. That's why we're asking for more members. For a couple of reasons we ask for 50 new members. Well, for one, if we're increasing our revenue, we can increase what we do with that revenue and not only survive but thrive. But also, we're taking the pressure off of those people that constantly step up and contribute. And we're asking just for more people to shoulder some of the cost of having independent media right here on the ground in Ames, Iowa. Community radio in Ames. 10 years, August 15th, will be 10 years since we first started broadcasting. And we like to feel we're making a difference here. And we're asking you to make a difference. Help support the station that supports Central Iowa. Go to khoifm.org and you can click on that yellow Become a Member Donor button. You can do it now. You can do it later. But while it's on your mind, why not do it now? khoifm.org. This is your community radio station. We have a radio station. When I say we, I'm not talking about Laura, Dennis, and me. I mean the community. So, of course, we're part of that, but it's a much larger thing. And so we all have an ownership in this. And I'm asking you to take a more substantive sense of ownership and help pay some of the bills. Go to khoifm.org. Make that contribution. Again, you can call. There's not going to be anyone to be able to answer the phone right now, but you can leave a message, and I'll be glad to call you back. 515-292-2878. We love to get contributions, but we also like to touch base and talk and have a one-on-one with members of the community, especially those that are inclined to support KHOI. So please do that now. We need new members. We need returning members. We need funds to keep this going. Shore up this wonderful media asset that we have right here in Central Iowa. KHOIFM.org is one way to go. 515-292-2878 is another way to go. Please do it now. You could do it while you're listening, absorbing all this information that we're getting from Laura and Dennis.
Thanks, Mike. This is Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin, and you are listening to Capital Week, your weekly listening post for politics Iowa style, probably the only show of its kind in the entire state on radio, and we're happy to be here. All right, Laura, let's get back to our look at the congressional races for Iowa in November. Congressional District 3, this is was raised to a national level on Tuesday night when Zach Nunn won the Republican nomination against Democrat Cindy Axne. This means money is going to come into Zach Nunn, and the prognosticators have already, as a result of his victory in the primary, turned this, they say, into a slightly Republican edge race now.
That's right. It was rated a toss-up. It's now considered a lean Republican race, and that's mostly because of the overall atmosphere and President Joe Biden's approval rating in Iowa. The fact that, in fact, that it's still just called lean Republican rather than likely Republican is a testament to Cindy Axne's position as an incumbent, the fact that she has raised a lot of money and will be able to mount a strong defense of her record.
A very interesting race, and we will be watching it. Also interesting, but in a different way, is Congressional District 4, Republican Randy Feenstra, in the incumbent seeking a second term. Interesting because the Democrat who will oppose him, Ryan Melton, and this is not a personal judgment, it is a professional judgment by every political knowledgeable person, the Democrat has virtually no chance against Randy Feenstra.
Yes, this is just a very tough district. I mean, it's a district that Donald Trump won by a large double-digit margin. And so Ryan Melton hasn't raised a lot of money. I think Democrats in the area are happy to have a name on the ballot. When there's no candidate even competing for a district, it tends to be demoralizing for a party. So I think it is important to contest every seat. But this is not one that realistically Democrats, even in a strong year, would be able to win. Now, in the old 4th district, people may remember, because Ames was part of that district, that J.D. Scholten came very close to defeating Steve King in 2018. That was about a three-point race. And that was more, I would say, about Steve King's particular baggage than about the district's makeup as a whole. Because in 2020, with Randy Feenstra as the nominee, it was a much less close race.
All right, let's start breaking down the statewide races, the other statewide races that we're going to see in November. Each one of these is interesting in its own way. Governor, Republican Kim Reynolds, seeking her second full term in office. She was appointed when Terry Branstad resigned to become Chinese ambassador. And Democrat Deidre Dejere. Kim Reynolds, obvious advantage as the incumbent, the most significant of which is she has a tremendous fundraising advantage over Deidre Dejere to start out.
Yes, the latest fundraising reports that were released at the beginning of June showed Deidre Dejere had a little more than $400,000 in the bank, and the governor's campaign had close to $5 million. So it is really a lot of money, and I would anticipate in the 2018 race, Kim Reynolds' campaign did start TV advertising around July, and I wouldn't be surprised to see some of those ads start, at least the positive ads, to tout the governor's record starting very early. I mean, there is a lot of time and a lot of money to spend on a statewide. And in fact, I expect the governor to be on the air probably in every major statewide market.
So how much of a disadvantage was it for Deidre Dejere last Tuesday night not to have a primary opponent? Therefore, she had no statewide advertising in the Democratic gubernatorial primary. And so she is still not terribly well known out there.
Yeah, I mean, there are two ways to look at it. In some ways, she was able to conserve some of her campaign's resources by not having to spend money to win the primary. We saw in the Republican race for state auditor that we talked about last week that the establishment candidate ended up not winning that primary because she just didn't realize that she had stiffer competition than she was aware of. So Deidre Dejere at least had the nomination locked up, but it is true that there was less excitement, I think, for her campaign because she didn't have to fight to win that nomination. And I do think that puts her at a disadvantage. I mean, going into the 2018 general election campaign, Fred Hubble had already spent millions of dollars on television and on direct mail. And so he was already much well known to the Iowa electorate as a whole than Deidre Dejere is now.
So the gubernatorial race is the highest profile statewide race involving state officials. But there are others, and each of them, again, quite interesting. Secretary of State, for example. The Republican incumbent is Paul Pate. He is seeking his third consecutive term after earlier serving in the 1990s. Democratic opponent Joel Miller, the Linn County Auditor. Joel Miller won 98 of 99 counties last week in the Democratic primary. Does Joel Miller have a shot against Paul Pate?
Well, he's going to need to raise a lot more money than he has now. He spent, I think, less than $10,000 on his campaign. He spent a really small amount of money on his primary campaign, and so it was impressive that he was able to win. He got more than 71% of the vote statewide, which itself was remarkable. I think talking to voters last week, Joel Miller benefited from the fact that people have computers and they have smartphones now. So a lot of people, when I asked them how did they decide on a candidate in the Secretary of State's race, they said they Googled both of them, and they found some articles. And so that's something that now candidates don't have to necessarily spend money on advertising. But to make himself known to a general election electorate, that would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it's really tough. The Democrat who was running against Paul Pate in 2014, Brad Anderson, he spent quite a lot of money. He fell short. It was a difficult year for Democrats. Deidre DeGeer was the Democratic nominee for Secretary of State in 2018, and she raised about $750,000 for that campaign. And again, it wasn't a blowout, but it wasn't a particularly close race. So, I mean, I think to beat someone like Paul Pate, you would have to probably raise close to $1 million just to get the name ID up. And then, again, any incumbent in Iowa just generally has an advantage. We are a state where we tend to reelect our incumbent.
So advantage Paul Pate.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Attorney General, Democrat Tom Miller, seemingly Attorney General here forever, seeking his 11th term. He is the longest-serving state AG in the history of the country. He's also 77 years old. Not old compared to Chuck Grassley, but he's 77. Republicans, Brenna Byrd, the county attorney in Guthrie County, does she have a shot?
She definitely has a shot. Brenna Byrd, under her maiden name, Brenna Finley, was the Republican nominee for Attorney General in 2010. And it wasn't that close a race, but she was much less experienced. At that time, she was just someone who had been Steve King's congressional chief of staff. She had been in private practice for a few years. She really didn't have a lot of experience. And Tom Miller is just an institution. He has, as you mentioned, he's been elected 10 times already. But Brenna Finley then later became Brenna Byrd. She served as Governor Terry Branstad's general counsel for a few years. She then has served as the Guthrie County attorney. And so she has a lot more experience as an attorney. She's also raising a lot of money. So far, she's raised more money than Tom Miller. And the Republican Attorneys General Association nationally is a group that raises a lot of money. So I expect Tom Miller probably will be outspent in this race. And you might say that he's favored because he's the incumbent and such a long-established incumbent. But I think in a Republican landslide year, anything is possible, even for someone like Tom Miller, who has been reelected before in Republican landslides. So Brenna Byrd certainly has a shot, and Democrats should not take their eye off the ball in that race.
Let's talk about the state treasurer. Again, a Democratic incumbent, Mike Fitzgerald, also seeking an 11th term. He's the longest-serving state treasurer in the U.S. He is 70 years old, younger than Tom Miller. Republican Robbie Smith, State House member from Davenport. Does Robbie Smith have a shot?
Yes, he does. Again, he's not well-known outside the Quad Cities, and so he is going to need to raise his name ID, and unfortunately for him, there is no Republican State Treasurers Association that's anything like the Attorney General Association in terms of fundraising. So he has been raising. Mike Fitzgerald doesn't tend to raise a lot of money or spend a lot of money on his campaigns, and so he probably should consider stepping it up as well. But Robbie Smith, I think he has a shot if the whole Republican ticket does well in Iowa. I mean, one irony that I've talked to with many political observers, Robbie Smith was the main architect of all of the election bills that have been passed since 2017 when the Republicans had the trifecta. And one of those bills in 2017 is best known for introducing the voter ID requirement, but it also eliminated straight ticket voting in Iowa. So people may remember that it used to be possible to just fill in the oval for Democrat or Republican at the top of the ballot and be done with it. Now voters have to fill in the oval on every race, and that is almost certainly going to work against Robbie Smith now as the Republican nominee running against somebody who's extremely well-known, has been the state treasurer for 40 years.
State auditor's race. This is the one where Democrats can probably breathe the easiest. It's probably not a cinch, but it's pretty close. Democrat Rob Sand, incumbent, seeking his second term. Republican Todd Helleber. But Rob Sand not only has the advantage of a lot of publicity because he's always putting reports out there, he has a ton of money in the bank, and Todd Helleber really doesn't.
he doesn't. I mean, this was just such a surprise because Marianne Hinojosa had the support of Governor Reynolds, Senator Ernst, Senator Grassley, and many state legislators. And so I just never thought that she could lose that primary. And I would have been thinking this year that even though she's not a strong fundraiser, that the Republican Party of Iowa might put a lot of money behind her in trying to defeat Rob Sand. And I just don't know with Todd Halber how much money are Governor Reynolds' campaign and other Republican campaigns likely to dedicate to this. Rob Sand, he's only a one-term incumbent, but he is out there. He travels the state a lot. He does a lot of local media interviews. And so he goes into the general election campaign with much higher name ID than Todd Halber does. And as you mentioned, that $1 million in the bank to spend. So I just don't know. I think that in a Republican landslide year, if it does turn out to be that in November, any Democrat on the ballot would have reason to be worried, and that would include Rob Sand. But right now, he seems to be, relatively speaking, in good shape. It doesn't look like his opponent is going to be able to mount a very well-funded campaign, certainly not like Brenda Byrd will be.
And Rob Sand is only 39 years old. A lot of Democrats around the state are thinking he's got a future, a real future here in terms of running for higher office, such as, for example, governor.
Yes, I mean, many people expected him to run for governor this cycle. He left the door open for that, to that for much of 2021 and decided against it. But I wouldn't be surprised if he is reelected as state auditor. He'll certainly be one of the people talked about potentially for future state offices. He did work in the Attorney General's office for some years before he ran for state auditor. So it's also possible that if Tom Miller either loses this year or retires after winning an 11th term this year, it's something that Rob Sand could conceivably run for attorney general in the future.
It's about 15 before the hour. Mike Murphy, we're electing you to come on right now, station manager of KHOI, to talk about the importance of this fundraising and membership campaign for this radio station and for the listeners.
It is important, Dennis. It's very important. The funding that comes into KHOI is not squandered, believe me. We're a hand-to-mouth operation where we have a very efficient use of funds. In community radio, like to say we do a lot with a little, and we would like a little more. So maybe if you can help with that, as I mentioned earlier, we have a goal of 50 new members. I would like for you to be one. Please go to khoifm.org and show your support right now. khoifm.org. Or you can call, again, 515-292-2878. That's the only way that this happens, is with community support. And I've got great faith in this community because we've done it for 10 years now. We're on the air for 10 years in August, and that is only because of this wonderfully supportive community. We've now moved into a new space, and we bought this space. So that's another way we're being more efficient in our use of funds, in that we're pouring it back into our own equity, our mortgage, as opposed to rent. So that's a big deal, but we have to pay that mortgage, and we have to keep up this new building we have. It's a great building, don't get me wrong, but it's an old building, so and it's everything's fine now, but you never know. It only happens with your support. khoifm.org. We need new members, and I want to thank all the recurring members and all the new members who have just become new members this fund drive. Thank you so much. I'd like to thank a few more people. Let's get some more new members. How about you? khoifm.org. Click on that yellow Become a Member Donor button or call 515-292-2878. There's no one available to take your call right now, but you leave a message, and I'll be glad to get back to you personally. Our community, we value our community, and we hope that you value what we do. Show a dollar price to that value and make that contribution right now. We could sure use it.
Please call or go online and do just that, as Mike was requesting. Laura, you and I have only about 5 minutes left for this edition of Capital Week. Let's talk about the final statewide race we're going to be covering, which is the Agriculture Secretary, Republican Mike Naig, seeking his second term. He's the incumbent, versus Democrat John Norwood, advantage Mike Naig.
Yes, I mean, this is an office Republicans have held since 2007, and it's just been difficult for Democrats to get any kind of name ID for this race. So far, John Norwood hasn't raised a lot of money, and this is something where he would probably need to raise at least $500,000 just to get his name out there. I do think that with the water quality issues that Iowa's having, there is potential at some point for a Secretary of Agriculture race to become competitive, but it would take a lot to make that happen. And Mike Naig, in his first campaign in 2018, he was supported by a lot of the ag industry. There was a whole separate dark money group that was created to run TV ads promoting him, and that's something that, if they sense that he's in trouble again, probably would happen again.
So we have a few minutes left. Let's talk about some of our favorite upcoming state Senate races and perhaps state House races. Not all of them, though. Let's go down to state Senate District 14, Laura. Van Meter, Adel, Waukee, parts of Clive and West Des Moines. This is a Democratic versus Republican heavyweight battle in November.
This may be the most watched Iowa Senate race in the state this year. Sarah Trone-Garriott is a first-term Democrat elected in 2020 to an open seat that had been held by a Republican. And Jake Chapman is going to be running for his fourth term, but he has been elected in the past in very heavily Republican districts. Redistricting put him in a suburban swing area, and that is very different from the type of politics he espouses. So he is the second-ranking Iowa Senate Republican. He is best known now for saying at the beginning of the 2022 legislative session that teachers were pushing a sinister agenda in Iowa schools, and that is something that Sarah Trone-Garriott has talked about a lot on the campaign trail. She has been out knocking on doors, her social media, every weekend. You see pictures of her out and her volunteers writing postcards. And so there will be very high level of volunteer engagement in this race, and probably pretty high spending by both parties as well.
We will be following this one with a microscope. Also, Senate District 46, two state senators, one Democrat, one Republican, going to be running against each other.
Yes, this is going a largely rural district, rural parts of Johnson County, so outside Iowa City and Coralville, and also Iowa and Washington counties. The Democratic incumbent is Kevin Kinney. He was elected in 2014 and reelected in 2018. The Republican is Dawn Driscoll, a cattle farmer. She was just elected for the first time in 2020, and they were thrown into the same district by the new map. This is a slightly Republican-leaning area that Trump did carry this district. On the other hand, Kevin Kinney does have a history of outperforming the top of the Democratic ticket, and he is a farmer himself. So I think that this one could be competitive, and I do expect the parties to be spending a lot of money there.
Let's drop down to House District 28. It's an open seat. Adel, Van Meter, and parts of West Des Moines. The Democrat, former WHO-TV anchor Sonia Hightchusen. The Republican, former Iowa Congressman David Young. Again, this is a heavyweight race.
Yeah, so this is part of Dallas County, and it is half of that Senate District 14 where Sarah Trone-Garriott and Jake Chapman will be facing off. So a heavy spending area. David Young, a very business-friendly Republican, has always raised a lot of money in the past. Sonia Hightchusen, first-time candidate, but starts the race with fairly high name ID due to her long career on Channel 13 in the Des Moines market. And so who knows what's going to happen here. The district is fairly competitive. It might be just slightly Republican-leaning, but it was pretty competitive between Joe Biden and Donald Trump in 2020.
And House District 46, Grimes and parts of Urbandale. This is interesting. We know who the Democrat is, Bridget Carberry Montgomery, but the Republican, we don't know yet, even after the primary, because there were five candidates last week. None of them reached the threshold to win. There's going to have to be a nominating convention, and none of them may be chosen at the nominating convention.
Yes, and the candidate who I think was favored in that primary ended up finishing third in terms of votes in the primary, which is not to say that he couldn't win the nominating convention. I'm speaking of Dan Gelbach, who's the Waukee school board member. But anything can happen. I think that this race, as you say, anyone could have their name placed in nomination. They don't necessarily have to give it to the person who had the most votes in the primary. David Young, by the way, was famously nominated for Congress the first time at a district nominating convention after he was not first, second, third, or fourth. He was actually the fifth vote-getter in the primary, but yet he ended up getting the nomination at the convention. So it just goes to show you anything can happen.
And these are just a few of the races we're going to be following. We will be previewing more next week and throughout the time between now and the general. Of course, there's going to be a lot of other news about campaigning and charges and countercharges. And I can tell you, Laura and I are excited about what's going to be happening for the next few months because we live for politics, don't we?
Oh, yes. I mean, there really are a lot of competitive races. And a big reason is that Iowa doesn't have gerrymandering. The fact that we have usually a few dozen Iowa legislative races a year that are potentially competitive is very unusual. There are much larger states where they might only have a handful of state House and Senate seats that people even play for because of gerrymandering.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left on this broadcast. Mike Murphy, why don't you take one of those minutes and make a final pitch? This is it, Mike. This is the graduate ceremony right here for supporting KHOI for a membership or donations.
Well, I just want to take a minute to lift up the importance of Capital Week. I mean, KHOI is a great station. We've got 168 hours of interesting programming every week. But what about this program? There's nothing like this in the state of Iowa, to my knowledge. This kind of in-depth analysis by two people who know this stuff and love this stuff. And I said it before, they make it look effortless, but a lot of work goes into this. So how about showing Dennis and Laura some of the love and make your contribution right now and tell them that you made that contribution because of what Dennis and Laura bring to our community.
Well, you're not making it, of course, Mike, to a contribution to Dennis or Laura, but to the station so that we could continue doing this broadcast, which we enjoy doing. We really do.
Yeah, and it shows.
Well, Laura, we are out of time. What are you going to be looking for now? It's sort of a downtime a little bit. In the next 20 seconds, tell us what you're going to be doing this week.
Oh, I have to catch up on some state legislative and state government stories, so hope to have some things to talk about next week based on some public records that I received recently.
When are the candidates going to start gearing up again and start campaigning again? They're going to take a little time off now, right?
Well, I don't know. I think that they probably shouldn't take too much time off. I think Mike Franken is probably going to be out there trying to do as many events as he can around the state, and not just political events, but summer festivals, places where he can reach audiences, county fairs, for instance, places where you get the people who aren't super engaged in politics.
Okay. See you next week.
Oh, I'll see you then.
You've been listening to a special hour-long edition of Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will Zoom right back here next Monday night in this time slot, when we'll return to our normal half-hour program and when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it and we value it. Between now and next time, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.